Star, do you want to be on the intro this week?
Not this time, thanks.
Okay.
Hey, there it goes. She's like,
oh, that's actually pretty good.
Hey there, welcome to The Horrible Show, the video game podcast for HorribleNight.com. This is the episode for Wednesday, April 6th, 2011. I'm your host, Justin, gamertag J-Devil. And tonight, we're going to look back at the headlines of March and try to figure out if any of them matter or not. Joining me this evening, we've got Cole Monroe.
What's going on? We've
got Ethan Moses.
Hey!
And Justin Gifford.
Hey, guys.
Before we get into our news discussion, we kick things off with our threesomes of the week, where everyone has listed three things that have had their attention in the last week, then warm up the video game conversation with our on-the-spot question, dive into the news of March, and wrap things up with HorribleNight.com updates and game industry shoutouts. We get faster at these intros all the time, but lucky for you, we will drag our threesomes on to tangents and no man should go towards. Starting with Cole.
Well, let me tell you something, brother.
Ew.
We watched WrestleMania this weekend.
Is that what that was?
We being me and Justin Lacey.
Me. That I'm guy. Raising my hand Jay so Devil. We can tell who I am.
Yeah, that guy. He's the, you know, that one. Oh, man, was it bad. I feel bad. Like, I was all like, let's get WrestleMania and, like, talk these guys into getting it. And it sucked.
Dude, I completely expected it to suck, so it didn't disappoint.
Well, the Triple H and Undertaker match was the best match by far.
Yeah.
And the Miz and Cena was okay. The Rock's involvement was mediocre at best.
Dude, the Miz and Cena match, which was the title match, it sucked. It wasn't even okay.
The Rock's involvement made it okay.
Yeah.
At the end.
They were bad wrestlers, but...
Also, Edge was the other world champion, and he opened WrestleMania. You don't have your world champion open WrestleMania, or any pay-per-view, or any wrestling show, period. You have him on second or third to last.
What, and did he sing?
That being said, what?
Did he sing? He opened.
No. He destroyed a fake Rolls Royce.
That's outrageous.
Why? Because the people's elbow? He's a communist? I'm confused.
No, the other guy he was fighting drives a Rolls Royce to the ring.
And we made a joke that we're like, he should go Street Fighter on that Rolls Royce, and then he pulled out a crowbar and started
beating.
But,
what was I going to rant about?
I don't know, but we'll continue our WrestleMania conversation on Cole's wrestling podcast, because I have a feeling we should start one of those.
Yeah, it was bad. It's bad. I feel... Oh, I know what it was, real quick. Also, Rock, at the end, destroyed any hope of anybody looking better than him. And he's not even a full-time wrestler.
Clarify?
He beat up the champion, he beat up the number one contender, and then he left celebrating.
That is awesome.
And he's not going to be on the show until next WrestleMania, probably.
And he fist-bumped Pee-wee Herman.
Yeah, Pee-wee
even
Herman.
Better.
Yeah, it was fucking awful.
I feel.
Did you say fist?
The fact
fist
that I didn't
bump?
Wash that.
Fist bump.
But I know The Rock did awesome. I feel good.
Like, I wouldn't call him doing awesome.
It wasn't great.
Rolls Royce. I don't know.
No, it wasn't The Rock. It was some other guy.
Oh, I'm way confused.
Yeah, don't worry. It's easy to happen. I'm done with wrestling for
a while. Life.
I'm done with wrestling after that for a while. So I'm gonna try to keep it to a minimum from here on out. All right, so I also watched this movie called Frozen. It's shitty. I heard good things about it. It's a movie where three kids get trapped on a ski lift. Three college-age kids get trapped on a ski lift. I think Kevin Smith tweeted about it and said that he liked it, so I thought I'd give it a shot. No, it's not good. Don't watch it. It's boring. It's not thrilling. Not intense. Like in the promotional materials for it, people said they were left the theater because it was too much for them to handle. Sure, a guy gets eaten by wolves, but you don't even see it really. It's awful. It's on Netflix streaming. Don't watch it. It's bad.
We should.
I'd be more intrigued if like two of them ate the third one while they were still on the ski lift.
Yeah, that would be way better.
Because I hear we taste like bacon, and bacon is fantastic.
From who?
Cannibals call people long pork.
Also, that's why Jewish people don't eat pork, is because we taste too much like humans.
No, I don't know if it's not.
I think he's onto something.
If we taste like bacon, I'm going to eat the shit out of people.
Well, I mean, it's why they used to be able to give like people pig insulin. It's because for all intents and purposes, people and pigs are very, very close biologically.
Wow. Oh, this is good news.
So basically, if you're ever stuck on a deserted island and somebody doesn't look like they're going to make it, kill their ass before their fat stores go and smoke them, because they'll taste like smoked bacon. And that's delicious.
Wow.
Well, I was going to say we should turn the threesomes just into more of like a warning segment of all the bad shit that we watch but now we're getting useful advice out of it. So
yeah,
we just turn it into ways to make bacon.
what about games wise, Cole?
Oh man, I went back in the catalog and bought Portal on Xbox Live. I kind of talked about it in the Meanwhile article posted on Tuesday, but I had it on Steam for Mac, and I can't play with that damn Magic Mouse and keyboard. So I thought I'd play with a better combination for me personally, which is the gamepad, and it's been pretty successful so far, even though I'm stuck right now.
But you do know that they sell two-button mice that actually work for the Mac, right?
Yeah, but the frame rate's bad. It was just hard to play. And I'm not good at keyboard-mouse combination. That's why I don't play any PC games or Mac games. So.
And that was my other question, is if it's controlling fine on the gamepad.
Yeah, it seems to be. I mean, it's great. Okay. It's like any other first-person shooter-type game.
Fair enough.
So, let me make sure I got that right. The Mac sucks for gaming?
My Macs do, yeah.
Okay, just wanted to make sure that
we even got with that right. A Magic Mouse, it still sucks, which to me seems odd.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
Let's go to Gifford's threesomes.
I watched Skyline, which may have influenced my alcohol-influenced purchase of Battle Los Angeles on Xbox Live on Saturday night. Skyline was, as far as like sort of summer popcorn-y sci-fi flicks with shit blowing up, I kind of liked it because it was a little bit darker than normal. And even though I think they broke a cardinal rule of sci-fi, it didn't end with the, heroic but scrappy underdog saving the day. So I guess it worked well with the Butler game.
Ethan, I need you to watch Skyline and tell me if it's better than Battle Los Angeles.
Okay, I will.
Yes, aside. Or maybe we can get together because I need to watch Battle Los Angeles, so we'll trade roles.
Let's just watch, and we'll cap it off with an Independence Day for a trilogy.
What was that?
Was that a good or a bad?
Yeah, no, that sounds great.
All right. I thought this was an excellent idea.
Like Skyline.
Cool.
Mostly, except for the whole... I'm sorry, but if you nuke something and it doesn't have shields, guess what? Nuclear fire breaks things down to elemental levels. It doesn't automatically reconstitute.
Science chat with Justin Gifford.
Yeah, sorry. I read a couple of books, but nothing really worth repeating. But I also read the American Bar Association Journal this week, and there was kind of a cool article in there about this woman made an independent film documentary about the McDonald's coffee spill case that everybody knows about. To explain tort reform, which they talk about in Congress, but nobody's exactly sure what it's about. So she put it in context of the McDonald's coffee spill case. So right. I haven't seen it. I can't recommend it yet, but it definitely got my attention. And, as I said, I downloaded Battle Los Angeles, which has all kinds of flaws, but it is not broken, and I did not have one of those waking up sober and going, oh my god, what did I do last night? Kind of regrets for downloading it. It's nothing special, but, you know, it also wasn't broken. So when you come to a drunken download of a game made about a summer movie, I'd say that's somewhat high praise.
How much was it? Was it 10 or 15?
Whatever 800 points goes for.
About 10 then. That's okay. Yeah, I mean, they just kind of snuck the release in, and everything I've read about it is said what you said. It's not broken. It's a functional shooter, and it's $10. So
does it have a multiplayer to it?
Yeah, wow. I haven't played multiplayer, but I mean, like, it's not real realistic. There's effectively no recoil function. So like, you can unload a clip from an M16, and the crosshairs stay where they're supposed to go. But other than that, like, there's nothing really wrong with it.
Fair enough.
Other than the crosshairs don't move when you fire.
But we're trying to come up with a name for that phenomenon of drunken downloads. Drunken downloads, but
I told Lacey my Carrie's family refers to them as it's an alcohol related something. So it can be an alcohol-related injury, an alcohol-related purchase. So an ARD.
It talks a purchase. It talks. I like the acronym. I don't like the
mishmash of words.
Yeah. There's a little bit of piracy combined with like drunkenness.
Yes. Always a good combination.
Yeah.
Let's go to Ethan's threesome.
Well, speaking of alien encounters, I downloaded a game on my Android, which kind of had aliens in it. It's about a cow who I named Milky, and all of Milky's friends got abducted by aliens, and so Milky's quest is to climb into the sky on floating platforms and attack the alien spaceship.
I feel like you just tried to make a children's game. Like
this I need to download this right now.
Yeah, I think it's a lot like Doodle Jump.
Okay.
Complete Doodle Jump knockoff. I haven't played Doodle Jump, but from what I surmise of the game, it appears that it's along the same lines, and it's fun. I mean, I was away from my computer and my Xbox and PlayStation 3 for a week, which I did survive, which was good, but I played a lot of little stupid phone games, and this one, I mean, they put some effort into it. It was free, so I guess you can't get too upset about that.
By Syme Mobile?
That's who did, that's who made it. I wanted to fit that in with, you know, my threesomes don't have a theme this week, but I thought I could kind of nestle that into a Gifford's theme, so we got aliens covered on that. Second, I partook in...
Where's the transition? Come on. How are we getting from aliens to whatever you're about to talk about? Come on.
Hey,
when
aliens finish
with
cows, they turn into dust.
Oh.
But hit.
Well, yeah, that'll work. actually, I partook in one of Justin Lacey's least favorite activities, reading this past week. got a book called Dust, which... you know, the bookstore downtown here in Indianapolis is closing down, and like everything was 70% to 80% off.
Another victory for the good guys.
Oh well, I'm kind of sad it is closing down, but I took complete advantage of it. So Aubrey and I went down there this weekend, my wife and I, and bought a bunch of books, and I picked up Dust, which is a zombie book from the perspective of the zombies. And, you know, it was like $2, so I wasn't too concerned about it. I'm at page maybe 85, and I'm just not – I just can't get into it. The zombies are so – I feel like they're all in love. I feel like this is the twilight for zombies, and it's just – I don't like the writing style. I don't really like the concept. I don't like to be in the shoes of the bad guy, you know, and zombies are usually bad guys.
But the zombies are actually writing the book, so it's just more than...
Yeah, and the explanation is that they have telekinetic or telepathic powers, and that's how they communicate. And they just added a lot to the anatomy that doesn't need to be added. I'm not a fan of it.
Do they sparkle?
No, they don't.
God.
Oh, shit! Yeah, they do! No, I just got to a new chapter, and... yeah, actually, they found some new zombies, and these zombies are kind of glowing. Holy shit, yeah, so...
It's just gross.
Oh, boy.
You just read Twilight.
I'm going to throw out there, Ethan, you want a really... I sent you the link, but if you want a great zombie novel that is, like, well-written, check out The Reapers of the Angels.
I'm on it because I need some retribution.
And, like, it's good literature. It's by... Who the fuck is it by? Alden Bell, who is not a horror writer, but it's a really good book.
Not a horror.
I'm on it. I'm absolutely on it. Because I think, you know, zombies, I mean, can be written well, you know, and people just presume that, zombies, it'll sell, and, you know, just shitty writers jump on top of it. So, yeah, I'm going to jump on that, Gifford. That actually looks pretty good.
Writer pile. Sorry.
The last activity that I partook in, and one of the reasons why I wasn't able to make it to WrestleMania, sorry guys, because I was up until 9 o'clock watching the Acro Cats and the Rock Cats. They came to Indianapolis, which I was shocked about because they're huge. Essentially, if you would travel back in time and kill
never
me,
never heard of them.
I'll explain this to you, and this will give you a better idea. If you would travel back in time and killed me before my wife met me, this is what her occupation would be today. Okay? It's basically this crazy-ass lady in a cat suit with all these cats that she's trained to do these tricks, okay? And they're jumping around, and they're, you know, climbing stuff. And the thing that threw me off, though, is that, you know, you're expecting cats, but then she had, like, a groundhog and a chicken. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And to close the show... To close the show, they jump on instruments and they play music. These are cats. These are real life cats. These are not animatronic cats. Real life cats playing
music. Where did you see this?
Down at the Fringe Theater here on Mass Avenue.
Cole, I think this is better than WrestleMania.
Yeah, I think it actually was.
I was disturbed by this.
Well, Justin, I think you would die if you went to
this. It's probably true.
Well, they sold beer, which was a good thing. I just sat there with, like, a really angry look on my face. But I couldn't help but, like, laugh at just the sheer insanity of it. And these cats, like, cats don't cooperate. You know what I mean? Like, they can't be really well trained. And so she was like, presenting tuna! And this cat just jumps right off stage and runs into the crowd. And everyone's screaming. It's hilarious.
I'm glad Gart found out about that, or I wouldn't have watched WrestleMania.
I was going to say, Aubrey was looking for... I mean, Aubrey loved it. She was looking for somebody, my wife Aubrey, she was looking for somebody to go with her, like, round two on Sunday. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
I can't top that.
Highly recommended. Not so much.
I finally took the time to watch Louis C.K. stand up on Netflix the past week. Heard a lot about him, but never actually took the time to watch him. And, you know, for a comedian to get my attention, they have to offend me or semi-offend me. And he had at least three moments in this. I think it was a stand-up from, like, 2008, but that got under my skin, and I was thrilled. It was fantastic. So he's just very, very unassuming in his delivery, and just will spout off some of the more offensive material I've heard in a long time. So... I'm going to be tracking down more of Louis C.K.
Have you heard Daniel Tosh's new CD?
I saw the stand-up on Comedy Central.
Like the newest one.
I think so. I mean, I think it's... I don't know if his CD is out from it, but...
Yeah, the most... I just downloaded his most recent one, and if you want to be insulted, the Fringe, definitely you'll get it from this. It was amazingly funny, but yeah, his next... he's on a new level now.
I mean, I saw the Comedy Central stand-up that was new a month ago, and then I saw his previous one that Cole, you sent me that CD or whatever, the album.
Yeah.
I think Louis C.K. is more offensive. So.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to listen to
him. Have you watched his show, Justin?
Tosher. No, I have to watch Louis C.K.
that was on FX?
No.
It looked good.
Louis.
It's pretty good, too. It's not as offensive because it's on FX, but it's pretty good. It's on streaming, I think.
FX, which has the best show on television.
Yes, it does.
Sorry, you probably want clarification on that. Justified.
I'm fine. What? What?
Yeah, I said it.
I thought you were going with It's Always Sunny. That's
Always Sunny is good. It's really good.
Sons of Anarchy is pretty damn good, too.
All right. Also really
good. We're not getting paid by FX, so...
Yeah, then there's...
I also went to... Queens of the Stone Age was in town last week, and they... We're celebrating the anniversary of their first album, and so they're playing at a smaller theater in town, and it was also a smoke-free theater, and it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. And I wish more bands would kind of go back and play some of their older stuff like they did. I mean, they played through the old album and just random, B-sides of songs, and for the size of crowd and the fans that were there, it was right on. I don't get to see very many shows like that, so it was pretty cool.
For our fans in developed parts of the country, we're still not all smoke-free here.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So that's why Justin felt necessary to point out that it was a smoke-free theater.
It was so nice. And games-wise, picked up WWE All-Stars. We gotta bookend it with wrestling apparently, I'm loving that game. Even though I ran into an unfortunate incident where I was destroyed by a button masher. That game has a pretty sophisticated reversal system, and if you can pick up on the patterns of the moves that your opponent's doing, that's why I like the game. But when you're playing against somebody that doesn't want to know how to play and just hits literally, I thought the springs in his controller were going to break. He's hitting every button all at once, and it was impossible. And so that was kind of frustrating. But other than that, it's a really fun game. So I'll be reviewing that somewhere in the near future. So let's move on to our on the spot question, brought to us by Gifford this week. What you got?
Something a little bit less complicated than the last time I had this. I started out asking about Dogfish Head Brewery. They're not going to sell in Indiana anymore, which is sad. But then I thought that has nothing to do with video games. So I asked Spencer, he's back, and he wanted to know if there were going to be any successful transmedia partnerships, which translates to one media, like TV or a movie turning into a successful game, and if so, from whom? And sub question being, if you think there's already been one, defend.
And we also have to add the fact that he's using the word transmedia because it annoys the shit out of me. So Ethan, what do you think?
Okay, good major. I'm using it sarcastically.
Well, as I analyzed some potential transmedia examples,
I'm not gonna make it.
I think Resident Evil's already done it. I think that, I mean, it depends on what you classify as successful, but I mean, I believe they have some very successful games. They have some pretty decent comic books, graphic novels, some pretty mediocrely received movies and action figures. So I think they have.
I think we just got to define the successful side, but it's kind of hard to disagree with Resident Evil at this point. Cole, what do you got?
Yeah, Resident Evil is pretty good because their games have been well done. Arguably, the Harry Potter series, which is what I'm going with, the games aren't always that good. Although I think those Lego Harry Potter games have been decent. Plus, they have a fucking theme park, so eat it.
A theme park's hard to top.
Resident Evil actually does have a theme park in Japan.
What?
They did.
Why have we not scheduled this trip?
That is very expensive, and Yeah, I don't have that much money. Let's throw that together.
We made a joke off air about a Dead Space theme park, but I had no idea Resident Evil 1 existed. That's funny. If anybody's going to do it, I still don't think... I don't think Resident Evil and Harry Potter are... Well, Harry Potter's tough. I don't think they're at the level that I would call it a transmedia success, which would be like basically blockbusters across the board, but Harry Potter does have two going for it. So I'd say that's probably further along than Resident Evil, but Resident Evil has a, has a broader scope of work with, you know, graphic novels, straight to DVD stuff, movies, the games.
Wait, let me interrupt real quick. Harry Potter has fanfic though, slash fic.
What is slash fic?
You know, like where I don't really want to get into it. and I'm ashamed that I know what it is, but it's like where
just talking about fan fiction.
Harry and Ron, fan fiction with sexual overtones involving.
I'm so
Ron
glad you brought
Harry.
This up.
Yeah.
Wait,
I don't think there's
that
might not happen with any of your other series.
I don't think I'm gonna put that in the references.
Actually, there.
Yeah, probably not. You should probably just edit all this out.
No, no, this needs to be associated with you for the history of the site.
Can I just mention that there is Resident Evil based hentai,
oh, shit, no.
And I won't go into how I discovered that, but I'm just gonna throw that out there. So that's
now I might cut. Now I might cut
I'm
this.
Really
section.
Sorry, I brought this topic up. Next time, ask about My Little Pony.
Just remind me not to follow them around the internet. Come on.
things happen.
How did I get here? I like this. Anyway, all I was saying was I don't think we've had like the one that's going to put it on the map as far as something that excels at all forms of media. But I think if one comes out of the game industry, at least BioWare is going to be behind it just because of all the effort that they go to with basically doing the backstories of the universe before they produce these game series. And, you know, I'm hoping, honestly, that it kind of becomes Mass Effect, that, you know, it's got mobile games and graphic novels and regular books. And I'm hoping at some point somebody with a decent budget and know-how takes on a movie. And it could also branch off into a TV series pretty easily, in my opinion. Gifford?
excuse me. I would add on to that, BioWare has already done it. When they had the the Old Republic games, they took this movie, which was also into books and comics, and turned it into really top-of-the-line AAA games.
Yeah. I had no idea they had the books behind that series.
Well,
I guess that's what I mean.
Maybe not behind the series, but you know, there was some stuff set in the Old Republic.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess I don't know. That's just my definition of success is that more pop culture is going to be aware of the other instances of it, and I still feel like gamers and hardcore Star Wars fans know about some of that stuff, but it's why I don't feel like Resident Evil's even gotten there. Like, it's got movies and games, but that's kind of what stands out. And
yeah,
Harry Potter.
I guess I'm throwing out Knights of the Old Republic because it was an Xbox, a big Xbox release, yeah. The original one.
I think it just established where BioWare was going in the future, and they learned so many lessons from doing that game that that's how they're approaching their original franchises. So I think it'd be crazy. I mean, for like, you know, the best Star Wars developer to kind of go head to head with Mass Effect at some point, but that's my dream. Speaking of dreams, I don't have a transition from dreams to news headlines, but I just did it. So let's go over the news headlines of March. So each month, beginning of each month, we take a look back at the headlines of the month and talk through a little Q&A, and at the end of this, we'll try to determine if any of these headlines are going to matter in the months going forward. So I will kick us off with the big release of the month, whether or not we were into it at all. The Nintendo 3DS is out in store shelves in North America, and the release, there was a lot of speculation as far as everybody wanted to know how much it was going to sell, if it was going to sell out, and you know how it did. And right now, you know, they're not releasing, they haven't released those figures yet, but it's pretty easy to today even find a 3DS on store shelves. And but Nintendo's kind of touting that, you know, that that doesn't mean it was a failure. It had like the biggest launch day for any handheld, and maybe they were just better prepared this time than say like the Wii shortages that we went through. I did actually get to no one on the site actually picked up a Nintendo 3DS, but I did get to play one at Target the other day, and I'll say I was, even with all the hype around it, I was surprised at how good the 3D experience was. I just played a little bit of Pilot Wings, but it was still better than I thought, and I could, you know, if I can see myself talk, yeah, it works, and I can see myself talking myself into playing it and purchasing it, because it doesn't have the, you know, it doesn't have the glasses factor in the way, and if they make a game that actually I feel will make use of it or is worth playing in 3D, I'll certainly try it out. Cole, what did you think when you played it?
Kind of same thing. I kind of actually wanted to buy one, even though I won't, just because I want to see what other games are going to be like in the future. But Pilot Wings was really cool. I just did the where you fly a plane through rings and would vary the 3D levels throughout the game I actually played, and it was cool. I mean, you could definitely see a difference from regular 2D to the 3D, and I was shocked how well it worked. I did feel kind of, I don't know if it was because I was had a headache or what going into it, but I did feel weird after I played it for a little bit. Yeah, like I, you know how, you know that feeling you get when you stare at the magic eye, those 3D magic eyes for a while?
Yeah.
Your eyes kind of lose their focus and whatever. They just get tired. And my eyes were tired, and I didn't play it for very long. So I think you just need to train yourself to.
Yeah, I wonder.
Look at it like that, because it's not something that you're used to.
I wonder if if that
Spencer has thoughts.
Spencer does not like the Nintendo 3DS.
I
because he is partially colorblind.
he hates all video games. Let's face it. I was gonna say, I just wonder if you will train yourself to kind of overcome that, or if it'll ever go away. It seems to be the one kind of factor out there. Like people, it's not really making people dizzy, but there is like you kind of have to readjust back and forth. And because I kept thinking about it, like, what if you're trying to play this at a stoplight? You know what I mean? And then refocus on driving afterwards. Yeah. And like,
shouldn't do.
I'm just throwing that out there.
Don't play your 3DS and drive, people. Well, sounds like you have experience doing it, Justin.
I don't own a 3DS.
Well, not a 3DS, but a DS.
I'm just saying, I don't own a 3DS.
I can't say a phone. I've done it.
Ethan,
I
was going to say, recently, I mean, not news from March, but recently, I mean, in the UK, there was actually an article out today that a lot of people are returning the 3DS right now. I mean, there's a big movement, and a lot of people are complaining about headaches and eye problems. So, I just read that before I left from work today. I'll definitely post that up. Yeah. But I think that if you have to adjust anything physiologically about yourself to be able to play a game, besides, you know, gaining excess weight because you're inactive, I think there's probably a problem with that. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm just not.
Yeah, but don't you have to you have to change the way your hands operate when, you know, growing up to be able to play games too. They're not
your hands weren't necessarily
made to play. Yeah, well, give you a handache.
Handache.
I do have really horrible carpal tunnel syndrome, so maybe I'm completely wrong with that.
You gotta build up those Call of Duty calluses.
When it comes to my brain, though, I like to—I don't know—I like to preserve my brain because it's already in a state of
disarray,
decline. So
yeah, and your sight as well. Sight is important.
The other side that's kind of come out of this is there was a lot of breakdowns as far as how much the 3DS actually cost to make versus the $250 price point, because a lot of reports are saying it costs about $100
for Nintendo. $103.71.
That's messed up.
See, that's not my reaction at all. That's like...
people are suckers?
No, because we're so used to... We're so used to, like, the Xbox and the PlayStation 3 taking a massive hit to get the install base. And here's Nintendo actually identifying the demand for their system and not taking a hit at the beginning. Like, I mean, I'm not going to argue it's not overpriced, but I mean, I don't think they should sell it for $150. I think, you know...
Oh, I think $200 is where they should be at.
When it comes to Nintendo having a $100 actual product cost plus $3 in labor, manufacturing, and then another 15% for transportation and tariffs, you know, all three of their major consumer bases, Japan, the United States, and the EU, are capitalist. Like, good on you if people pay $250.
Yeah, that's how you make the statement, is you don't buy the thing. I'm interested in the technology. I will play handheld game systems. I like, if the games are good enough, I still go back and play my DS every now and then. But I'm not spending $250 on a new machine that has no games worth playing right now. And that's kind of been the other. I mean, they're not saying the games are awful, but there's no console seller out there for it. And, well,
for you, there's not.
For a lot of people, like, well, I mean, a lot of people
are still buying it though.
I've
got a handheld. I've got a smartphone.
That's another conversation.
I mean, if I had a BlackBerry, then I wouldn't be saying that. But I guess I feel if you've got an Android or an iPhone, you've got a smartphone that has a lot of good games. I mean, they're not. It's not Fallout 3, but you've got good smartphone games, and I don't want to play a game that gives me a headache. I get enough of those already.
Yeah, I think we need to revisit that topic down the road, but I think probably we all agree. If people are buying at $250, that's their thing, but Nintendo will drop the price, and there will be more games worth playing down the road, and I may pick one up at that point, but I can't really get upset at them right now because they're not giving me a reason to buy it, so I'm not complaining. And if a game comes out that I want and it's still $250, you'll probably hear me complain at that point. But you know, I think Sony had a bad business model with the way they priced the PS3, and don't shit on Nintendo because they actually made a smart business decision on this one. So
no, I'm not going to shit on Nintendo for this, but you know, when I just paid, had I been able to get the Xbox I wanted, Microsoft assholes, and by that I mean the one without the Kinect, but the elite version with the big drive, you know, it was going to be like, it would have been like $350. The Xbox,
yeah,
with the 250 gigabyte hard drive and the HDMI. And are you kidding me? You want 250 for a handheld? I don't think so.
Yep, but yeah, like I said, not for everybody.
Yeah.
All right, enough attention to 3DS. Let's go to Ethan's headline.
Well, real quick, right now, I just wanted to point out, I had mentioned that the 3DS had been getting returns, and I just double-checked my my source on that, and at this point, it's unsubstantiated, so okay. There's kind of some movement in the community trying to figure out whether or not it's true or not, so The Sun did report on that, so
All right. So
just as an FYI. My story is something that really, really excited me, and we just talked about Resident Evil a little bit, so I thought, why not continue? It was just announced that Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City will be released in the fourth quarter of 2011, which is around Christmas time. September till December?
After July 4th, I think.
Is it after July 4th?
Yeah.
It's sometime in the future this game will be released. That's good enough.
I agree.
It's being developed by Slant Six Games, and they're going to revisit Raccoon City, which just pumps me up so much because I think that there's so much that could have been done with the city that just kind of created all of the Resident Evil mythology, if you will. I think that the approach that's being taken on this game, a lot of people, just reading forums, some of the reactions, a lot of people are a little bit unsure about the direction this game is going. I think they made a really wise decision in not making this Resident Evil 6, but making it kind of a addition or a side game. Because
what's
again,
what's the direction? Sorry.
The well, yeah, I was getting to that, Dick.
Jeez.
The direction they're going with this, it's a four-player squad-based shooter, and Slant Six is known for the SOCOM games, so. You know, again, that seems completely different from, you know, what any other Resident Evil game has been. But I think that there's room for expansion. They've done it with some of the light gun games with Resident Evil, which were, you know, pretty successful on the Wii. And I think that there's a pretty cool opportunity to introduce a new type of multiplayer kind of play here. Because you, from the reports, you're going to have a choice between Umbrella, the U.S. Special Ops, and actually the bioorganic weapons that Resident Evil is known for. So, you know, I think that we were used to games, you know, where it's humans versus humans. And Left 4 Dead, it started to approach the humans versus zombies and actually being able to approach to be zombies or other mutants. But adding that, you know, Resident Evil brand to those enemies is going to be pretty cool, and I would love to play as the hunter or the licker or the Cerebus dog.
He's got some weird role playing.
Well, I was just as I'm talking, you know, the names of the enemies on that game are kind of crappy. If you think
yeah.
Hunter, licker.
Hey, it was 15 years ago.
It was 15 years ago. Yeah, a lot's changed.
Tyrant, since. Nemesis.
Well, those are
Japanese people designing the game. That was something they did, which I think got a lot of kind of praise, even though it didn't work out perfectly. In Aliens vs. Predator 2 for PC, I think, like being able to play as the alien, and then in Left 4 Dead.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, hey, you're not playing as somebody behind a crosshair.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited too that they're taking the series in a new direction. I think you're right on, Ethan. They've been going down the sequel route, which is fine, but I want to see a different style of Resident Evil game, and I'm glad that they're, you know, they should have named. I think we're in agreement now. They should have named Resident Evil 4 and 5 something else.
Yeah.
And because they could continue to kind of spread out this series, and you know, it's been around 15 years, and it's about time they tried some different stuff. And you know, if it tries and fails, that's fine too. But it's not, you know, canon necessarily to sticking with the main sequels.
Mm-hmm. And I just think that this is the type of game that I just kind of have a feeling that this is going to either sink the Resident Evil series, or it's going to open it up to a new generation of gamers and introduce them to where it all began. Because I think that there's a lot of people that have come on to Resident Evil after Resident Evil 4. You know, I think there's a lot of people that hadn't played one. I mean, that again, 15 years ago that came out. So the new gamers that picked up the series, they have no idea. They probably know it, you know, the reference to Raccoon City, but they probably don't know. And I sound like a huge geek when I say this, but the history of Raccoon City and how that's contributed to the games that they're used to today. And I think this is a good way to, you know, kind of send people back a couple years and just establish that foundation. And again, this is coming from someone who's an absolute nut about Resident Evil. And so other people may be like, nah, I completely disagree with you, Ethan, but that's okay.
That's not.
You're wrong.
I haven't played any of other Slant Six's games. You guys may know more than I do on them. I don't know. I don't know how to react to them developing it.
Well, I know they didn't originate the SOCOM
Which games. SOCOM did they do?
I think they picked Which up one the later did they ones. Do? The later ones.
Okay. Confrontation.
They did the one that's on. Okay, I played that one, and it wasn't bad, but from what I hear from SOCOM fans, it wasn't SOCOM. So I don't really know how that will will translate to Resident Evil series or not. I mean, I liked it. I had a good time with it. I thought the squad-based shooting was fun. I think it'll be a lot better with the different enemy types rather than just soldier versus soldier, though.
Yeah, either way, I think it's just good they're bringing a new company to it.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely get a new.
Yeah, I think it'll be really cool to see how this turns out.
I'm excited for it too.
Let's go on to Cole's headline.
So PAX East was last month, and they mentioned, or they talked about a lot of games that are coming out on the arcade side or PlayStation Network, and I just want to mention a few of them. Bastion, Giant Bomb has been doing a great series on them on, what is it, Supergiant Games. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, Supergiant Games. Bastion is like an isometric action RPG that the art style looks amazing, and it's got this cool narrator gimmick that's going on. Like it narrates the story for you as you're playing. There's a bunch of videos on Giant Bomb, like I said, and then everybody should check it out. It looks really great, and it's supposed to come out sometime later this year, summer actually. So it might be in the Xbox Summer series called, I think it
Summer
might be in that.
Summer of Arcade, I think.
Is it just, yeah, Summer of Arcade, how easy.
The Summer of Arcade is kind of currently up in the air, but they're getting a lot more quality games kind of applying for that series, and it's just, I mean, it's a big deal, and it will be even a bigger deal going forward for games to get into those promotions, because they get so much more exposure.
Anyway, another game that I saw that that they mentioned at PAX was this game called Fallen Frontier. And I did a little article on it last week or Monday. I don't remember. It's
been a long week already.
I think it was yesterday. It was Monday. And it looks amazing. It's like a Shadow Complex, Contra, some kind of Metroidvania game.
Bionic Commando.
That's it. Bionic Commando. It's just they all kind of got combined. It's got a cool like art style again. Like these games that are on Xbox Live Arcade are bringing it with their graphical styles.
Differentiate
themselves from the main AAA titles that are released in stores. It has multiplayer, co-op. So Contra like that has grappling hooks like Bionic Commando, and it kind of like has the same setting style as Shadow Complex. So I'll be definitely checking that out but it's not going to come out until 2012. So unfortunately, we have to wait.
No, I was
gonna... I got so excited when I started writing the article, and I was like, God damn it! I want to play that game right now.
The coolest thing about PAX for me when I went was all the indie game section. Like it was fun to go see the big games and the big developers and wait in the big lines, but the indie games were just just a much more fun atmosphere, and they just continue to promote more and more games through PAX that are really helping out a lot of indie developers, and I just think that's an awesome side to PAX. And also might as well take this time to bring up the fact that we're currently getting a group together to go to PAX Prime this August, so kind of be on the lookout for that. I'll probably throw that up on the Facebook page when we're looking for any other people that want to tag along with us. But
and
a lot of these developers of these indie games come from big teams like the Supergiant Games. They've developed Command and Conquer games for EA, the Fallen Frontiers, some guys, ex Bungie guys. So I mean, they know what they're doing, and they have the pedigree to develop great games, and I just think it's cool that they're taking a different route of getting, doing what they want to do instead of what somebody tells them to do.
Yeah.
Also, on the upside, it sort of is a personal bonus for us. The indie guys oftentimes are the ones that we get to talk to. And
yeah.
And that care that, yeah, like, they know that we really care about games, and they really care about games. And I think from some of the pedigrees of the guys who are developing some of these great indie studio games, they started their own studios because they really care about the games.
Yeah, I love just the environment that's developed around the downloadable services. From the combination of being, I kind of view it as the second tier. Like, I think the smartphone games are kind of establishing themselves as like the entry level into game development, like the quick and easy way to get your games out to a large audience. And then I think it goes the next level up is the downloadable services. Just people complain about, you know, the practices of Microsoft and Sony to be able to get your games onto their downloadable services. But I think you've got to have a little bit of a proven history that you're making quality games, and those are the games getting pushed, and they're coming from guys that have been a part of large development teams on successful franchises wanting to go back to the smaller team. And I just think that's really cool that there's going to be just so many smaller companies out there doing this.
Yeah,
we're going to get better games for it. So,
come on, guys. What, you're really bitching? What, you want to have, like, turn out shovelware for Nintendo?
No shit. Like, yeah, that's what happens when... anyway. All right, let's move to Ethan's next headline.
Well, this was a cool story that caught my attention. Essentially, recently, the game Rift was released, which is a massively multiplayer online RPG, and I guess they were really getting hit with a lot of hacking. And the an individual that happened to be hacked, he himself was like a super hacker who was actually a computer security expert, and he helped the creators of Rift figure out the problem with there was some sort of issue with the programming on their server, and it was allowing people to log on to people's accounts without any sort of information, and he helped them kind of stop that. And with all the talk lately with hackers, especially with the GeoHots and Sony, you don't often hear about a good hacker, a friendly hacker, a white hat, if you will. That's what Man With The Plan, who is the hacker that we're speaking about here, calls himself, actually coming and helping big game companies. When I first read this story, I imagined this Lord of the Rings style battle between the good hackers and the bad hackers, and this is kind of a fun story to read. But if you really think about it, we have so much information out there on us. Our games rely so heavily on the internet, and there are a lot of people out there who are just being huge dickheads, and we really need a lot more like good hackers out there. And I maybe this is what I'm doing is I don't know how to hack, but I will lead an army of happy hackers to prevent the breakdown of internet society here. But I mean, it's crazy what's happening now. And with Anonymous taking aim at Sony right now, there's just like this huge hack battle going on, and I feel like I want to be part of it. And I hope this guy kind of jumps in, and I'd like to see more of this happening, because again, I know that a lot of hackers think that they're doing good for society. Realistically, 75% to 80% of them aren't. They're just being huge cocks. And
what they really need to do is focus on the Church of Scientology.
That's our Scientology, Westboro Baptist Church. Yeah, I mean that's what they should be doing, but instead they're, you know, I don't know. I don't like the mentality a lot of them have, and I don't like the idea that, you know, I love playing games, but my Steam account actually somebody attempted to hack my Steam account recently. Steam Guard protected it, so, you know, way to go, Valve. But I mean, it's amazing someone can hack on to a game and steal your credit card number and go from there. It's just a bunch of douchebags, man. Yeah. I want to punch them.
Yeah, I had that actually happen with my World of Warcraft account when I came back and discovered my password no longer worked because it had been hacked at one point, and then they blocked the guy, and I had to kind of get where everything restarted. He didn't get anything because everything was disabled, but he had actually gotten in and messed around. But that's just becoming a more and more problem, especially with some of those games that you put more and more of your life into. But I just want to know, Ethan, some of the gamer handles of your happy hackers army. I think that would be my favorite part. part about your crew.
And I have an article about this, so again, I'll link onto it for the podcast. But definitely read the article, because in the full interview with this guy, I mean, he himself had like a hacker army, and they have some. I mean, you've got Man with the Plan. You have someone like, you know, called like super awesome, you know, fucking the Scoo. I mean, it was just like these guys sound amazing, you know. And the most amazing part is they're really intelligent guys who actually use their intelligence for good, which I'm kind of a dumb guy who uses my stupidity for good. And
you're
I would really like
dumb.
To have
you're
hacking
just not
skills.
A tech guy, Ethan. Don't ruin the English major's hopes.
I wish I was a tech guy. I want to be an elite hacker here, man. I'm so this pumped me up.
Pay attention to your math classes.
Yeah.
No, I've actually noticed there's another guy that I don't think it was anonymous, but one of the other guys that was doing a lot of the hacking of PlayStation kind of turned his attention to Xbox and kind of showed them one of their vulnerabilities and was like, you can hire me to fix it, basically. Like, or he was trying to do it to campaign for a job. And it's kind of that, like, you're right that a lot of hackers do think they're helping, but they go about it in kind of a twisted reality. And but I'm sure there's a lot more white hats out there that we don't even know about that have gotten jobs because of some of this stuff, but they don't do it on the publicity level that like Anonymous and this Rift. It was nice to see the Rift guy get some positive attention. So,
well, I mean, there's what is that? There's a thing where they do, it's a big security conference they do every year in Vegas, and it's not just electronic, they do locks as well. And a lot of those guys have gone out of their way to try and contact the manufacturers months in advance to be like, look, we've identified a big vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give it to you, but you got to fix it. And some of the articles I've read about that, the response from the security companies, whether it's, you know, Kryptonite, the physical lock people, or from Norton, has been fuck you.
Really?
At which point they've been like, look, we're going to publish this in 2 months. And the response from some of the security companies or the software companies has been, you know, they've tried to sue to stop it. And I guess I have to wonder, where's the gain in that? Like, would you rather spend 75 grand a year or I don't know. It just seems like backwards business practice.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's all backwards. Let's go to Cole's next headline.
When Homefront came out, their reviews before launch were decent, but as soon as – and that's why they were pre-released. Once the game came out, Homefront and real scores started coming out, their stock dropped 25% in one day. And I think – I wish stuff like that wouldn't happen, I guess, in a perfect world, but – just because of the Metacritic score causes a company to lose a lot of money in their stock portfolio, I think it's kind of ridiculous. They're bigger than just one game. They had WWE All-Stars coming out to save
them.
Come on!
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where it is now, and this was, you know, middle of March, so it might have recovered, but I just think it's kind of ridiculous that a Metacritic is that powerful to affect.
I don't like the fact business, that, you know? That Metacritic is almost, they almost play ignorant or like pretend to be ignorant of that fact. Like they like deceptively play up the fact that they are influencing business conversations like this. And it's just like, what? I don't know. It's very, very Spider-Man. You know, with a lot of power comes some responsibility, and they exercise none of it. And but that's, you know,
and they cause a lot of people to lose their jobs too. Eventually, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I have a slightly different take on this, which is a lot less sympathetic. Which is one, although I have not bought Homefront, it's because I've read consistent mediocre to negative reviews, with the exception of. GI?
Game Informer?
Yeah. Was that the 8.5?
I don't know.
There was one major gaming site gave it a pretty high review. Everybody else said, like, look, this isn't that great of a game.
It's not that great.
You know, part of it is you guys are a business and you turned out a mediocre game, which was you guys publicized all the hell. If it wasn't that great of a game, maybe you should have told your marketing department to cut down. And the other part is because not so much what I do now, but what I used to do is research-based. And because we are journalists and we try and be fairly neutral when we're writing an article. Like, I love BioWare, but I didn't like The Arrival. And I wasn't afraid to, you know, say, hey, The Arrival, not that great. I think Metacritic's approach of, look, we're just aggregating the scores is legit. Like, we're aggregating these scores. I don't want people to lose their jobs, but if the game you guys cranked out wasn't that great, there are problems with the industry, the publisher/developer interface. Absolutely. But
you're right. It's not Metacritic's fault. You're right. But some of their, like I said, their ignorance.
They just have too much power.
And
they aggregate scores. How is that?
I don't know. They pretend to be like completely
a neutral arbiter.
I don't know. They pretend to be Switzerland and that they can't do anything about it. But and maybe like long term it'll work out that way because you're right. A lot of it has to do with some of the other deals going on with, you know, the fact that, hey, if you give us a certain score, and we'll let you have the game early and talk about it early and get cover stories, and that's where those higher scores come from before the releases come out.
Right, but Homefront had that embargo on reviews.
Right, from all the people that didn't have those deals, just the high reviews were they came out early and the score was high. And then the day of, when that embargo went up, it got blasted. Yeah, and
I gotta wonder, like, why did you have the embargo?
No, I mean, a lot of games do that.
Well, and fine, but I just mean, like, you know, when you look at it long term, like most of the great games we talk about, whether it's this generation or previous generation, Metacritic has borne out.
But. Yeah, but a lot of those games
they don't have our reviews on there.
Not yet. Well,
not yet.
Go ahead, Ethan. Go ahead.
Well, I love THQ. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, I think that the point is, and I agree with you, Gifford. I think that if you release a bad product, I mean, a lot of people complain about, you know, the Activisions releasing like, oh, these crappy games. Why are they keep releasing them? But I mean, those games are selling well. And this shows that, you know, the people that publish, you know, video game content, people that review games, even the reviewers themselves, I mean, they have a lot more power than maybe once thought, you know, because again, it's always the assumption is that a game, you know, the corporations will control who buys what. And I mean, I think this really proved that that's not the case, you know, and I think that it wasn't a great game. And whereas, yeah, you know, the Metacritic score probably contributed to that. The big thing to show here is that gamers do have a little bit more power than maybe we thought we did, you know.
And maybe a like real big case in point is Valve's success. Until the Orange Box came out, and feel free to correct me if this is a faulty example, but until the Orange Box came out, they were PC only. And they were still, damn, Valve turns out great shit over and over. It takes them a while, but they do.
Mm-hmm.
Without being part of the console mechanic, and that was partly because they turned out great games, and regardless of Metacritic, people bought their stuff.
And
regardless of Metacritic's reviews, if Homefront was a great game and Metacritic, you know, it turned out Metacritic's score was a 6.5 or 65, sorry, they're on a 100-point scale, then eventually it would have turned around, or it wouldn't have mattered. THQ's stock would not have dropped.
Yeah, but
my problem with
not picking up the game.
Go ahead, Cole.
My problem with it, though, is there. I mean, and I know the stock market is totally speculative, so this might be really naive for me to say, but they're basing their stock. I mean, people are trading their stock because of bad reviews. Games have sold millions of copies on bad reviews, and the it stock was recovers just because of the review, right? But maybe they should wait before, you know. I don't know. I don't like I said, I'm very naive about the stock market, so. Maybe take a wait and see approach and see how many games sell before you drop it that much.
I think that's what was the first year they did the Vision Cone for Madden? Really bugged the crap out of people, and it was like 2008, 2007. Not great reviews, but it still sold a crap load of games.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess I'm just not real sympathetic.
No, well, but it's any other company that produce a bad product, I mean, speculative or not, if there's a bad product, if there's a potential for something bad to happen, stocks are going to go down, you know, up or down. I mean that's just realistic, and I don't think video games should be like the aside, you know. I mean, I don't think they should be the exception. I mean, the BP well, you know, explodes, and yeah, stock is going to go down because it's pretty obvious that there's going to be a lot of issues that come as a result of that. So what would prevent THQ from releasing? And again, you can't compare it to the BP oil spill, but I'm just trying to use an exaggerated example here.
But you're dropping stocks based on journalist reviews, not on sales.
Well, let's talk about movies. Transformers 2 got crappy reviews, but it still did, you know, close to $1 billion in global sales.
But Paramount stock didn't drop at the reviews either.
But I mean, those are established franchises that they could make more surefire bets on. This is our problem. Really, isn't Metacritic, because Metacritic was only relevant because these early reviews came out that gave it a false high score is essentially what our problem is for a new franchise that nobody knew anything about in a genre that is dominated by Call of Duty that makes $1 billion. And stock market people wanting that next Call of Duty and saying this looks like it's going to be it, all based off of, you know, false reviews. And that's
THQ's fault. THQ's marketing strategy failed. They have this massive marketing strategy of how great is this game, and then people actually played it, you know, other than a couple of media outlets, and they went, this game isn't all that great.
Yeah,
like that's THQ's fault. I'm sorry, and not the game developers. So, well, I mean, they made the game, but still, you know, that's THQ's fault.
And I like THQ. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I agree.
Yeah, and I'm not smoking THQ.
But
in this case,
but we're saying it's their fault that the stocks dropped that much because to build up those false expectations. Because I'm with as many pre-orders as it had to have sold fairly well still. So
I transferred my pre-order.
So I don't think it's going to go down as a failure. It was just like it started getting hyped up as the next big thing and then fell on its face. And it's troubling to see they still can't predict some of that stuff a little bit better with things that come down to just, like we said, kind of bad or shady journalism. That was interesting. I like a little bit of fire there. But let's we're gonna wrap things up with Gifford's headline.
Okay. No surprise to anybody. Rain is wet. Spring bring April showers bring May flowers, and Duke Nukem Forever was delayed. That said, even though Gearbox is in charge of Aliens Colonial Marines development, I have faith in Gearbox. They really took their sort of media approach to releasing, hey, Duke's not going to be out till later this summer, was tongue in cheek. They made fun of themselves, but at the same time, I feel that their take on it is, we don't think the game's ready. I guess what I'm taking out of this more than anything is, I like to see a developer say, we don't think the product is ready and we're going to fix it.
Yeah, it didn't seem like any of the other delays. It was like, I guess that was I thought it was just kind of funny, but because it's Gearbox, kind of trust their decision more so than 3D Realms saying we're delaying it again. You know, it was, you know, we can actually, we know what we're doing. Obviously, something happened that they have to address, which, you know, probably some game-breaking bug that didn't come together like they thought, but, you know, it was like delayed a month. It wasn't, it's not like they're saying, oh, it'll be out this for the holidays or something like that. Then the eyebrows would get raised. And I'd also, you know, I have extreme faith in them too, but I love them for their sense of humor. And I thought that video was fantastic.
I think, was really Duke funny if you haven't seen it. Yeah, if you haven't seen the video, it's very funny. It's the head guy from Gearbox and sort of the Office style, I guess. And on top of everything else, they took the bull by the horns. It wasn't some like sort of aside press release. It was, crap. We know how fun, like, we love games. We've been doing this for a long time. We know how funny and like ironic this is, but we have to delay it. And that just says to me, they have every intention of releasing this in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah. And we're fans of the game industry. You know, we try to take, like, I think we're still all learning how to, you know, kind of keep some of our opinions to ourselves and trying to approach things as neutrally as possible initially. But, you know, this is a site kind of that thrives on our opinions and is born of our opinions. And we have a lot of strong feelings about individual developers and companies. And Gearbox just happens to be one of those that is becoming at least more of a model of at least the style of developers that, you know, I think a lot of us like. And it's hard not to be fans of them even when faced with the adversity like this or bad news, they handle it in a way that is really relatable for us.
And I think the thing that really gives me the most faith in Gearbox is simply they've ported some major games.
Halo?
Yeah, to PC. And PC was my first experience with Halo. And I like it better than the console version, which is unusual for me. And when you see somebody who can do a port and do it really, really well, those are guys who really know what they're doing.
Yeah.
At least from my lay perspective, I'll defer to Lacey as far as whether or not that's accurate. But
no, that's how I found out about them, and I my first Halo experience was also on the PC, and I preferred that game on there versus at least the Xbox. I can't really say that for the later ones, but it was one of the first times I can remember playing a port and taking notice of who did it, and that. Especially at that time in my life, I wasn't as, you know, living and breathing game industry news as I am more recently.
It was almost a decade ago.
But I knew every time I saw the Gearbox name, oh, that was the Halo port guys, and just was thrilled in recent years when they're getting their own, you know, their chances to do original franchises. And, you know, I'm sure Duke Nukem Forever won't really, you know, change games by any means, but they now have control over that, the future of that franchise, and I'm more excited to see what they do with it down the road. And I'm glad they're also taking their time with it and not just putting out, you know, I don't think that game will be really all that good, but they obviously identified something in it that made it broken, and they didn't just get it out there to get it out there.
Yeah, and I mean, as I guess a closing note for Gearbox, they also did Counter-Strike and Borderlands. Those are 10 years apart. So this is a studio who knows what the hell they're doing.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the closing of this discussion and take a look at which of these headlines we think are actually going to matter down the road. Ethan, what stands out to you?
Resident Evil, because I'm really excited about it.
Coleman,
I'm gonna go with the PAX East games. I think it's a great direction that the indie developers heading in, and we're just gonna see more and more games be more successful in that field.
Gifford,
I'm actually going to go with Cole's headline about the THQ stock drop. I'm sort of optimistic that maybe the publishers, because I think this was a publisher issue, will take note of, hey, perhaps we shouldn't super hype a game unless we've got some pretty solid, I don't know, gamer response to how good the game is before we release it.
I mean, what do you do in that situation, though? Like,
if you have a crappy game, you pull a Blizzard.
You publish the hell hell out of it to get sales, even though it's crappy.
But,
yeah.
No, I mean, I think you do a Blizzard or what Gearbox did. I think you say, game's not ready.
Some reason that didn't even pop in my mind. But
you say, we're delaying this till November. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Like, Too Human?
Yeah.
Didn't work. But on the other hand, StarCraft II, it worked.
Yeah. Nice. Good call. I'm going with Cole on the PAXE stuff.
You, Justin?
Thanks, man. I'm going with Cole on the PAX East games, just because I'm really excited about the future of downloadable titles and seeing some of these kind of spin-off companies produce their first games and try to make a name for themselves as more individuals than as a part of a larger team. I'm curious about the Resident Evil game, but I still don't think it'll make any final waves either way. And then 3DS, all thing I have to say about that is I don't think we'll remember in 2 years that it was $250. So, but it'll still be around. All right. Brings us to our HorribleNight.com updates. Last week we announced the next Horrible Night Out at NetHeads, April 15th, Friday at 8 p.m. And the whole crew, the whole Horrible Night crew will be there and we'll be gaming in Indianapolis is, from what I can tell, only an internet/gaming cafe, and I think everybody's going to be really impressed with the setup there, as we were when we kind of previewed things. So we'll be playing at. They have dozens of games there, a lot of current releases, a lot of competitive games, easy for multiplayer, and they kind of.
What systems do they have?
They have 360. They have a bunch of 360s and a bunch of PCs, as well as one Wii station. And they also serve snacks, and on Fridays when we're going, they get to serve beer. So,
how convenient.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do?
I'm gonna be playing host, so I will. That's probably
you're not gonna imbibe at all.
It probably is not a good idea for me, at least on the first one. So
I'm going to play Obnoxious Tag Along. So I'm just going to peer over people's shoulders and breathe really heavily into their ears as they
talk shit to them.
Yeah. And then I won't even play. I'll just be like, ah, you're a fucker. And then I'll just walk off.
Sweet. That'll be good for this.
I'm going to play myself, which includes bringing a stun gun for Ethan.
But yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to it. As far as like getting able to try a few new games, I know they picked up Crysis 2 recently, which is one I've been wanting to try, and we'll probably bring some of our own games just to make sure we have them. But we've been talking, you know, Gears and Borderlands, and they got Black Ops and Marvel vs. Capcom 3, and
hey, do you think we could break out a 4-player game of Left 4 Dead 2? Huh? You think?
What's that game?
I've been waiting for you to send me an invite, Cole.
All right.
You have my phone number, right?
Yeah, I think I do. If I don't, I'll get it off
to you. It's on my Facebook page. So.
Okay, then I have it.
Well, anyway, we're really looking forward to that, and we'll have some more information up next week about NetHeads. And in the meantime, you can check out the event post as well as the event on Facebook to RSVP, so we can start to get an idea of how many people are going to show up. But that'll be next Friday, so hopefully we'll see you there.
Tax day.
Yes, it is the way to celebrate taxes. I'm so glad this will be done. Anyway, we're going to get out of here with game industry shout-outs, starting with Gifford.
I'm going to give a shout-out to Konami. solely because I made a drunken decision and they did not punish me for it. Battle Los Angeles was not the best first-person shooter I've ever played. On the other hand, I also played Iron Man the game, which was broken. And I'm also going to give a shout-out to Sacking Cities because I want to.
Well done. Ethan?
I just finished up the Fallout New Vegas downloadable content, Dead Money, and you know what? It wasn't the greatest DLC, but for some reason I am super excited for the next DLC coming out, because once you complete that DLC, it kind of gives you clues on what to expect, so I'm pumped up. I'm already about 85 hours into that game, so I expect another solid 35 to come from the next downloadable content that should be coming out here in the next couple months.
Wait, isn't the, what next is to come is the world is broken and everything's shit? Isn't that sort of Fallout 3's genre?
Well, that's already happened.
Yeah, they've moved past that. I'm addicted to that game.
Have they announced any other DLC though?
Right now, actually, ZeniMax bought what is it called? Anyway, there's a website that was purchased, and April 19th is a tentative date for something to come out, but there hasn't been any sort of announcements yet. But from the indications in the Dead Money DLC, there's definitely at least three DLCs coming out within the next few months. So I'm hoping. They're just being really they're just not bringing out a lot of information quite yet, so I hope they get over that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to opening that game. It's still sitting wrapped up. But no, it's more of when you commit to Fallout, you commit to Fallout. And I don't think the site would function if I was playing Fallout and World of Warcraft at the same time. So, Coleman.
Continuing our overall Resident Evil theme of this podcast, it seems. Code Veronica X and Resident Evil 4 are being remade in HD and they're going to be released as Xbox Live Arcade on-demand titles. It's the 15th anniversary of Resident Evil this year, and I guess they're doing that in celebration, as well as releasing a bunch of other games. So,
I didn't realize those were...
I'm looking forward to it because I never played either one of them.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Ethan, where does Code Veronica rank as far as the Resident Evil games?
Wasn't bad, but I put it below 3, 2, and 1. Nemesis, 2, and 1.
Do you like it better than 4?
No.
Okay.
Four is the one where they brought more of a shooter aspect in, is that right?
Yes. Yeah, it's tough to say I liked it better. I don't see 4 and 5 as Resident Evil games, right. So it's kind of tough to compare, you know? All
right, but it's not a bad game either.
Absolutely not. No, I mean, I still like it a lot. I mean, it's not, you know, it may be ranked below, you know, Nemesis 2 and 1, but that it's not far off. You know, it's maybe a couple points. So, no, it's still a good game.
Gotcha.
I'm sorry. The fact that you can't aim has kept me away from every game since I played 2. I like I can aim low, high, and medium.
You should check out 5, but yeah, it's not Resident Evil.
Still 5 is definitely the most accessible.
Yeah, it's fucking fun, even though it's not Resident Evil. I want to bring it back to WrestleMania and talk about The Rock one more time, because he's had a lot of microphones in his way lately, so he's also been talking about, I guess he's been reminiscing about the Doom movie recently and kind of dropped the hint that he would love to be in a Call of Duty Black Ops movie. Which, the only reason I'm bringing this up is my initial reaction was, I'd probably see that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Not even just because it's The Rock, but as much shit as I give Black Ops and the Michael Bayification of Call of Duty, I would watch a Michael Bay Call of Duty movie, because that's about the limit of that entertainment that I want. I don't want an 8-hour campaign, and I don't want the society of online gamers that come with it. But I would watch that movie.
I'm okay with like a 15-hour campaign, but I will go see any movie with The Rock in it.
Hey, if you find me a 15-hour Call of Duty campaign, you let me know.
I will, but yeah, The Rock, I'm there.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, our next horrible night out might actually be to go see Fast Five if I can find a way to tie it into video games.
Yeah, I won't be at that one.
Wait, is Fast Five coming out anywhere near the announcement of the new Burnout game?
No, it's like at the end of this month.
Nice try.
Damn it! Well, those two would work together.
We could give out a free download for Burnout, the download game.
I was going to say, maybe the DVD release or something. It's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks, gentlemen, for joining me on... This is a really fucking random news episode, but...
It sure was.
That's why... That's
at like 5 after 10, so...
That's why we like news episodes. Anyway, everybody else, thanks for listening. Really appreciate it. And we had a really great week last week. And just want to kind of give another shout-out to VatiglyOrSlutty.com. We enjoyed the conversation and kind of going back and forth with them, as well as I know some of our new listeners have come via that site, and we really appreciate it. And hope you found something else entertaining this week. But the Horrible Show will be back next Wednesday as well, and we'll see everybody then. Later.